Is that better?
Yeah, probably.
You hear it? Because I'm just playing with this.
I mean, you're just doing the junction box?
Yeah, whatever.
For the headphones?
See, I forgot how smart you are. The junction box? Like, I know what that is. I grew up in a typewriter store. I have no idea what any of this is. I'm a mess, man.
It's good to see you, sweetie.
It's so good to see you. I'm so excited.
It's been so long.
Are we rolling, Josh? All right, let's just figure it out. Everyone complains about the sound, so I'm just going to say I apologize in advance for the sound.
The Comedy Store would like you to know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are strictly those of the speakers or authors and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by the Comedy Store and its affiliates.
It's so bad. It's funny. We're making money at the Comedy Store and still nothing works. I don't know if it's the ghost, maybe Mitzi.
It's definitely the ghost of Mitzi.
Yeah, something
no
is happening.
About it whatsoever.
I hear nothing. I mean, anyway, I'm serious. Like, I'm so frustrated with everything, and I'm glad.
So, what do you want to do? Do you want this to be about Mitzi?
Wait, hold on. No, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to introduce you properly.
Wow.
But first, I have to explain that Rick Ingram, my co-host, who's very funny and would do a killer Argus impression and would freak you out like you wouldn't believe, he had car trouble, so he is not here tonight, but we're still going to do it because I'm obsessed with you, and I'm so happy that you came in here.
Oh, thank you.
And
so slightly.
This is the great Mike Becker.
Thank you. Hello.
You're not a stand-up comic.
No.
So
no,
tell us.
I barely stand up, as a matter of fact,
Mike,
anymore.
My heart. Don't say that.
No, it's true.
You're amazing. You're kicking it. You're kicking its ass, if you will.
Well,
your own ass.
Yeah, kicking my own ass. I fell on my ass many, many times.
But you get back up, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. No, I'm serious, because, like, I mean, technically, you were my boss. And, like, I was telling Rick and a few other people, like, you're as close to interviewing Mitzi as we could ever get on this podcast.
Yeah.
Without having Mitzi possibly come through tonight just to get pissed off, and because I know she's haunting this place.
So I'm
right. Not haunting.
Mitzi.
Yeah,
oh.
I don't know.
Eleanor, come on. Let's go.
No sleeping with the comics, Eleanor.
Yeah,
okay.
Don't. What are you doing?
Dice is a bad
Mike.
Choice.
Yes. That was the thing I dreaded the most.
Oh, when you would hear it bellow.
Come here. Mike, what happened to that guy? You know, that guy.
And no information.
No. You know, that one, that guy. You were supposed to get him. Oh. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'll
kind
get
of
him? Like, you don't know how to. Like, the closest I can tell people, if they ever watched, and I know it's like a chick flick kind of thing, but The Devil Wears Prada?
Sure.
Meryl Streep's character.
That's what I tell everybody.
Perfect.
I am writing a book.
Okay.
With a woman by the name of Lori Jacobson, who was a waitress here in the 80s.
Wow.
And then she went on to be a writer, and she wrote, she writes nonfiction Hollywood books.
Okay.
And so we hooked up together a few years ago and decided to write this book. And the log line, the hook of the book is Devil Meets Prada, Devil Wears Prada meets Almost Famous.
Ooh.
So in other words, I'm that guy, that kid from Almost Famous that walked into the Comedy Store in 1981.
Wow.
And then I became Mitzi's like personal assistant and all that stuff. And had to translate Mitzi-isms for the rest of the world.
Unbelievable.
So I was a translator. It was almost like the UN. It really
That's exactly
was.
Right.
It really was. I sent you the thing. I have. She,
oh, yeah.
She had like, I call, you know, they're Mitzi-isms.
Absolutely.
They're things that she would mix metaphors and phrases and statements. So she would say, like, he's got me over the eight ball. Or, you know, it's just the wind of my head.
What did that mean?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. So how would you translate that?
Well, that, I mean, I knew what she meant.
I don't.
So, but a lot of times she would, you know, she loved to write memos.
And
she'd love to write on her little pink pad. She had a little pink pad, and at the top it said, "From Mitzi." And she was the biggest proponent of ellipses. I don't know if you know what that is. Ellipses is dot, dot, dot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which she would go, dot, dot, dot. So it would be, okay, Mike, I want you to take this letter, okay? All right. And, okay, so the Comedy Store, dot, 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 is about to present, dot, dot, dot.
Oh. This,
and she actually, she wrote... She dictated a letter. It was a Mitzi letter. It made almost no sense.
Okay.
You know, half the time. And it was when the House of Blues was first being built.
Oh, yeah.
The one they just knocked down. So
yes.
It was 25 years ago. And
they gave her view back for her memorial.
Yeah. But she was pissed off that they were building, that they were having an entertainment venue, and that they were going to take our parking. So they had meetings at the West Hollywood Council meetings, and people were allowed to go and speak. And so she, of course, forced me to go two or three times. And she wrote this letter, you know, she dictated this letter to me. In the letter with all the dot, dot, dots, it said that she didn't think it was fair if the House of Blues presented comedians.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, but I don't think you can stop somebody from doing, you know, oh, just put it in there. Okay. And then you sign your name. I'm like,
wait a minute.
Okay. So I signed my name to the dot, dot, dot letter. I send it off to the city of West Hollywood. And then the next week or whatever, I go to the council meeting. There's like 50 people in the audience, all pissed off West Hollywood people that think that their neighborhood's gonna turn into a whorehouse. And Dan Aykroyd and Isaac Tigret, who was the guy, they were the owners of that House of Blues at that time. Tigret was the guy who actually invented the Hard Rock Cafe.
Right.
And,
no, I know that name.
Yeah, I think he's dead now. But
sorry.
So they're there. Aykroyd is there, like
being
Mr. Movie Star.
Yeah.
And assuring everybody. You know, he speaks for a few minutes, assures everybody it's everything's going to be okay. And he thought it was going to be like, well, they're going to be enamored with me because
I'm a
big movie star. And they started yelling at him and stuff. It was great. I loved it. I loved it. Oh, no, it's not. You're going to ruin the fucking neighborhood. And he was like, what?
Whoa.
Do you know who I am?
I'm kind of Dan Aykroyd, yeah.
So anyway, so then they call my name, and I came with Mitzi. So she goes, okay, Mike, go up and tell them. They're gonna ruin our parking and stuff. So I go up to the front, and this is the city of West Hollywood. So I'm not being homophobic or anything when I do this impression, okay?
Go for it, because I was in that.
By any stretch of the imagination. Because, so it's all these guys who have kind of an attitude.
Yeah.
And so I go up, and I have my 3 minutes or whatever to speak, and I say, hi, I'm representing the Comedy Store, and we'd think that, we would hope that the House of Blues would find their own parking, and blah, 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 la, la, la. Thank you very much. And I turn around to go back to my seat, and the guy says, Mr. Becker. And I was like, yeah? And we're not done with you. And I was, okay. So I go back up to the podium, and the guy picks up the letter and says, did you send this letter to the city of West Hollywood council members? The dot, dot, dot letter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, oh, shit. So it was like, so you said that you don't think that they should do comedy, and I was like, well, I don't, Mitzi's there. So what am I going to say? I mean, I'm in between. And I don't even want to be there. I don't really give a shit.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But I'm now all of a sudden representing the Comedy Store. And I have my boss sitting down behind me.
Yelling things to say.
So, and I just, I did, I don't know if you remember Jackie Gleason, but he used to do, it was like hamna, 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 and that's what I did.
Yeah.
I did the hamna, 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 I don't know. And all of a sudden, in the back, I hear, and it was Mitzi laughing her ass off.
Of course.
Because she loved to see people sweat.
Definitely. She loved to set people up.
Yeah.
Like, set up to fail. Yeah. She loved to fuck with people.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite things that she would do.
Yeah.
Which was weird, because it's like, this fucking old lady's picking, like, fucking with people. It's great.
No, she would... Yeah, turn
that was
people
her
against
sense
each
of humor.
Other, and yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, she would say it point blank. You know, she used to love to make me run, literally run.
Really?
Yeah, like go get that thing now. And she's saying, I love it when you run your fat ass over to your office. Oh, thanks, Missy. First of all, I have to say something.
Yes.
Just because it's true.
Uh oh.
I have to make a disclaimer.
Oh, we already have
I love,
one.
Well, not just that. I love Mitzi.
Okay? Yes.
There was a part of Mitzi that was fascinating, entertaining, and it was something that, you know, I really enjoyed. Then there's another side of Mitzi that I wanted to put a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger.
Absolutely.
Because she would just drive you out of your fucking mind sometimes. And... You know, I'd have to explain to the plumber and the carpenter and the architect and all those guys why they're not paying. She's not going to pay their bill because she didn't like the color of a piece of tile somewhere after the thing was completely done. You know, I'd have to. Well, Mitzi thinks that, but we finished it. She signed the contract. Yeah. Well, but you see, she thinks that because of there's so many things.
Trust me, I had to do a million of those. Except for you had all those people were separate. When I started dealing with her, all those people were just this guy, Juan Carlos.
Oh,
so
okay.
Juan Carlos would walk in and he'd be like, basically just got electrocuted on the roof. So he'd be, you know, his hair be standing up and he's, you know, turning colors. And he'd be like, the problem is Miss Mitzi. And then she'd be like, get out of here. Like just yelling. And I'd be like, but Mitzi, Juan Carlos isn't really an electrician. She's a whole duel it. I'm like, what's happening?
I know.
Right now?
She used to. I was telling one of the guys when I came in here tonight outside about Miguel, the Miguel the handyman, and it was. I felt so sorry for the guy because he didn't speak a whole lot of English, but he understood English pretty much, and so she would just make it. He was
well,
about 4 foot 2.
He probably understood just nod too.
Yeah.
Because he was part of like Santos and I think he brought Santos on. I forget.
Yeah, probably.
Santos was this older Mexican guy who didn't speak much English, but he would always, oh, mommy. I'd be like, Santos, inappropriate. He had 18 kids. God love him. None of them with the same woman. None.
Well, Missy would make me do things. She would ask you to do things that were absolutely impossible, that made no sense to anyone in the real world. But in Mitzi's world, it was completely...
Sure.
She had me once, and God's truth, she bought a theater, okay? She bought
the Richard
a theater,
Pryor
the Hollywood
theater.
Playhouse.
Right.
What the hell, the street?
That little...
In Hollywood.
Yeah,
anyway.
not Sycamore, but...
Las Palmas.
Yes, that's it.
On Las Palmas. And it didn't... have any parking. Okay. But
which is
she
perfect
bought it anyway.
LA.
That's a whole nother story. I could do a whole nother thing on that.
Oh, yeah.
But in the back of this place was a courtyard. And people at one time, whoever owned it at one time, had like, it was a place where people could go maybe have a drink before the play.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It was an open air thing with these giant avocado trees that would drop avocados on people's heads. So there was another factor of like, why?
But it's LA, so it's kind of cool. You're like,
maybe.
Oh, it's an avocado.
But she actually, with a straight face, wanted to call it the monkey bar before there was a monkey bar, right? But she wanted to call it the monkey bar. She wanted me to find out about getting live monkeys.
Yep. Yeah.
Have them live in the avocado tree.
Mm-hmm.
Actually live there, like that's their habitat.
Completely rational, Mike.
And she thought it would be funny if maybe they shit on people's heads. And you know, and when she tells me that stuff, it was like, yeah, okay. But
she was serious.
Not smiling.
Yeah, yeah.
She was 100% serious.
Get on it.
And so, but this is like 1992 or something. So this is before the internet. So I had to go. I had to call animal welfare and the wildlife waste station and all these places. And I had to get documents from the library, you know, back in the day, and prove to her that put live monkeys in the trees above where people are eating. I mean, anybody in the entire world would know you can't do that.
Of course. But
she...
Not Mitzi's world.
It's like, no. Don't they understand?
It's like, it would be funny.
Don't
get
they
it?
See it?
Do you remember the monkey furs?
My God. It was unbelievable.
Do you remember her monkey furs?
Oh, yeah. She had a chimpanzee coat.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I guess
As a matter of fact, one night we had a benefit for the wildlife waste station. I swear to God, in the main room. And it was like on a Wednesday. It was an off night. And so the wildlife waste station brought these really cool animals. They brought like baby tigers, or I think they were baby lions. And they brought a real tiger. And they brought a chimpanzee. And so they had the baby lions were backstage in the main room.
Did Mitzi skin the chimpanzee there that night to make a coat?
No, it was better.
Okay, good. Let's see.
So you know, she came late, and the animals, some of them were backstage. Like the tiger, they took away because I don't think she would even want to get near the tiger.
Right.
And the baby lions, you couldn't touch because they said they're more dangerous than a grown lion because they don't know their own strength and stuff. But the chimp was in the back. I don't know if it even exists anymore because I haven't been back there. But behind the main room, she built a bar.
Okay. Yes.
Back there.
Yes.
Right? So we had... The chimp was sitting on the bar, and she goes to the wildlife waste station benefit wearing her chimpanzee, real chimpanzee coat.
Oh,
walks back to the place, you know, to the back bar, sees the chimp and goes, "Oh, here's your mother." And everybody went, "Oh, my God."
No one understands Mitzi's sense of humor.
Mitzi was so inappropriate. It was
inappropriately
hilarious.
Funny. It was uncomfortable.
Oh, I got to tell you. I got to tell you.
Please.
One. There was my.
I'm obsessed.
I got to tell you this. Martin Lawrence was doing a showcase, or I think they were taping him for one of his albums or something.
Okay.
This is in the early '90s, when it was just big, and
probably you so crazy.
I don't know.
Okay.
And.
I was engaged to his agent. That's how. Bill Branca.
Of course.
My first ex-fiance.
Triad.
Oh, yeah.
Was he with Triad?
No, he had his own Branca agency.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then he merged with William Morris.
Oh, okay.
And that was it. Yeah, he didn't have his own. But maybe that was Martin's agents or something? Because
maybe.
Billy was his, PA guy, personal appearance.
Actually, I think it was Jim Berkus. Who now is the head of UTA. But anyway.
Oh, he probably has him now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Billy hasn't been in the picture since late 90s.
Yeah. Well, it was a show. It was him doing
something.
A one-man show in the main room. And it was being recorded.
Okay.
So, so the whole audience was African-American people.
Okay. Already, I'm nervous because of the way you said that, but yes.
So, Mitzi comes in, you know, makes her entrance and everything, and she calls me. She sits down at one of the bench seats. She doesn't go to her booth because there was people, customers sitting in the booth. She had the whole place, it was sold out. It was completely packed. So, she had me sit on the bench by the back door, you know, the bench there.
To the hallway there.
To the hallway, right by the hallway. Because she came down the hallway and she, you know, gestured me over, and I sat down next to her. Now, we're sitting in a room full of African-American people.
Yep.
And Mitzi says to me, did you hear about, I think it was Miguel or Carlos or some guy that was working for us. And I can't say what she said, but it was, she said, did you hear that he got mugged? I said, no, that's terrible. Yeah. It was the N people.
Oh my
she
god!
Said
she
it was,
usually said
she said
sparsy.
It was street ends.
Oh my
and
god!
I'm sitting. We're in the middle of 400 black people. And
oh my god!
I was like, oh, okay, Mitzi, maybe you should, you know, not use that word. I'm sweating. I'm like, oh my god, what did she just do? Why did she bring me into these things?
I think she wanted to see you uncomfortable. I don't think I ever heard her use that word. She always said schwarzies.
Yeah, schwarzes.
Schwarzes was her favorite. Schwarzes,
yeah, because it means black.
Black, yeah.
But yeah, she used that a lot. But no, she actually said,
wow.
And I think it was, I don't think it was because she meant to be prejudiced.
No, no.
I think it was because she heard somebody use it, some comic or probably a black comic.
Right.
Use it. And so she thought,
like, oh,
it was,
street.
it's a hip thing to say, you know, street blah blahs.
Yeah.
And so she said it, but it was like, oh my God. And I said, Missy, maybe we should go over
yeah,
here and talk because I
can't whisper
really
that one.
Hear you.
That's the one you have to whisper.
Oh, God.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Oh, God. She did that stuff to me all the time.
You just put you, it's almost like an adolescent child that just says, there's no filter.
No
and that's
filter whatsoever.
How she spoke.
None.
Constantly.
No filter.
I always tell this story. One time, me and Freddie Soto were at her house having lunch. I think it was lunch. And, so I'm just hanging out, like just sitting at her table, that dining room table, and you could see into the pool.
Right.
And so there was this Mexican guy who probably just re-roofed her house, and he took a break, and you saw him smoking a cigarette, and he put his foot on the wall and just leaned back, you know, calmly, no big deal, smoking a cigarette. And she just looked at him, and she was like, the Mexicans are getting uppity like the blacks in the 60s.
Oh,
and
God.
Me and Freddie almost died. Freddie is full breed Mexican.
Yeah, of course.
And he goes, Mitz, I can hear you. She goes, oh, you know what I mean.
Oh, I know.
But
I
mean, we were crying like cause she would do shit like that.
Yeah.
We were like, oh,
and you never know if she's doing it. With a
to
wink.
To fuck with you.
Yeah.
Or
she actually because
she never broke. She never broke,
no.
Like, to wink, like, hey, I'm just joking.
No.
She didn't give a shit.
I have a feeling it was a mixture because she came from that era.
Yes.
You know? I mean, she came from the Jim Crow era of the South when her husband Sammy would travel in
sure.
a station wagon with the kids in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an itinerant comedian, you
yeah.
know, stand-up. And they would go all around the country. And so she came from that kind of, you know, Jim Crow kind you know, 50s.
I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it was half and half. I think sometimes she said things to be outrageous, and I think sometimes she said things because she
just
you know.
To see what she can get out of people. Like, I know she used to, not to bring up Freddie again, but I think it was your birthday, and they bought you cake or something. And Mitzi was like, oh, come get cake. You know how she, everybody get the cake.
Oh, come on.
And then she.
See, the trick to doing Mitzi is it's a Wisconsin
oh.
accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
It's almost like Fargo, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every time I watch Fargo, I think of her.
Yeah.
Like, there
okay.
she is.
Come on. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but so she's giving out the cake to everybody, and I just walked by. I didn't go in. But Freddie, because I think I was going up to the talent coordinator. Maybe it was Scott Day at that
probably,
point.
Yeah.
So I went up. I was just going upstairs to bring up paperwork. And Freddie went in. He's like, hey, can I get some cake? And she goes, everybody can have cake except Freddie's fat.
Oh, yeah.
And Freddie was like, what? I'm not the only one.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He was
no,
so mad.
She was.
She could just cut you down.
Yeah.
But like. Again, she never broke. And then Freddie really didn't have cake. He was upset.
Yeah.
It was like, I was like,
know.
Freddie, we'll go get cake later. Let's just fucking get through the day. You know what I mean?
No.
You got errands to run because he was the runner, I think, at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Freddie was the runner at one time.
Yeah. It was great.
So was Carlos Mencia.
I don't remember Carlos being the runner.
When he was Ned.
Yeah.
When he was Ned Holness.
How were you there for that name change? Like,
yes. Mitzi gave
it. It was
the
totally
name.
Mitzi, right?
Yeah. She made it up. It doesn't mean anything. Mencia, maybe she heard it somewhere or something, but
she just
she
liked
made
the ring
up.
Of it.
Yeah, there was one day when she told him, same thing with Harry Basil.
Oh, she gave Harry Basil?
No. Harry Basil's his real name. Like, but what I was going to say is one day, Harry was the runner.
Oh, right.
And one day she would just tell them, you're not the runner anymore. I'm going to give you spots. And you're now officially a comedian.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Cool I mean, I would think of the door guys, but.
No. With
I guess the runners, Carlos, too. Yeah.
Carlos became, like, that's how.
He moved up.
He moved up.
Yeah.
From being the runner to being this, But I mean, he would get Tuesday at 1 a.m. spots. But
of course.
Still.
That's how I became friends with him. He was one of my first friends here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's not really anymore, but he was.
Well, I liked him when he was Ned. I mean, he was a great kid. He really was. He was a very friendly kid. Yeah. And then, I don't want to say that.
No, you can. It's okay. We have a disclaimer. One.
Well,
two.
But I don't want to, if he's listening, I don't like to say something.
No, I completely understand. But here's my thing with Ned, Carlos, whatever you want to call him. I didn't really have any issues until I knew what he was doing. I remember Mooney used to fight with him.
Yeah.
I can remember Bobby Luddington throwing a bottle at him, saying, if you do that joke again, if you do that joke again, I'm going to kill you. Like, so I knew what was going on, that there was lifting happening. But when I got close with Freddie Soto was when it really was like, fuck, this hurts, because he was killing Freddie technically in the beginning, because Freddie couldn't write fast enough to keep up with
keep him from stealing it. Yeah.
Well, they would be on the road together, and unfortunately, it was like
he would do the joke first Freddie came up.
He would tell Freddie, "You can't do this bit, and this bit. I'm doing it." So Freddie would have to come up with other shit. But if you were on the road with him, you knew that happened. So Freddie would call me, and I'd give him Ronnie Kenny jokes. Like, I'm like, dude, just try it. He's like, dude, I'm not an old white man. I'm like, well, what the fuck are you going to do? How are you going to come up with 8 minutes to do the Riviera tonight,
So, I sold Ronnie Kenny a joke once for $50.
I love it.
And he never used it because it really didn't fit him. But I think he just bought it because he felt sorry for me.
One of my favorite people, by the way, Ronnie Kenny.
I always wonder what happened to him.
I still see him once in a blue moon. He comes to Dice's house for parties and stuff. Him and Dice are real close. They're obsessed with one another.
Really one of the nicest guys.
One of the nicest.
There's a handful of those guys.
And he's funny.
Know?
Funny. He used to make me laugh hard. Like a grandpa making you laugh hard.
Yeah. Like Jimmy Brogan and those guys.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Brogan.
They're so nice. You wonder, how do they wind up here?
I know. I got to get Brogan on because I love him. I haven't had Ronnie on either. I don't think so. I should get him, too.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just hard because the older guys, they're like, well, not this week, And then they're like, they move away. Like, Dave Tyree is moving to Palm Springs, so, and he's like, I don't want to go on, honey. And I'm like, Dave, you have so much to say. Like, he's one of my favorite. He goes,
and
I don't
know.
He's
funny.
That's what he said. He said, because he's thinking it's performing. And I'm like, it's not performing. You're just talking, telling stories. And I know he holds court somewhere telling stories.
Of course.
It's Dave Tyree. He's one of the best.
Yeah.
But, so then my issue became, all that happened, right? With Freddie and Carlos, and then Freddie never turned on him. Freddie never spoke up. Okay.
Freddie was the sweetheart.
Exactly. Like Mitzi would say, he's got the heart of a woman. So I was like, Mitzi, did you just call him gay? All right. Anyway.
But he married a beautiful woman.
Princess Corey.
Yeah.
And so, but here's the thing, he never turned on him. He never said a word. And even if I would say, Freddie, you got to stick up for yourself, he would go, no, it's not how it works. I'll just write faster. I'll just write. Fine. Great. He understood this guy's employing him. He's on the road with him, right? So then Freddie passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then he got on stage, Carlos, at the Improv, and shit on him.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't hear this.
Yeah, it was awful. And I
You're
was
kidding. What?
It took a
How
lot
could
of people.
How possibly do that?
He just was saying, he's fucked up. He did drugs. That's why he died. If he wasn't a drug addict, he wouldn't have died. Too much coke or whatever he said. But it was devastating. And I wasn't in town. I believe I was in El Paso with Freddie's family burying him.
Oh,
and
God.
And when they told me what happened, and there were. It was multiple people that told me, and I was just like, I flipped out, and I wanted to kill him. But people were like, just let it go, just let it go. And then I didn't see him for years. And then I did a podcast where I said something
along those lines about what he did. And he wrote me an email saying he's so disappointed with someone like me turning on him. I was so nice. And all those smiles were probably fake. And I ripped him an asshole that I would have torn his heart. I wanted to tear his chest apart, like, right, and rip his heart and beat him with it,
right,
physically. But yeah, I wrote it and did it, and he never wrote back again.
Well, when he became that persona of Carlos Mencia, you know, one of my favorite things he used to do on stage, it was, you know, he would say, you know, some people call me a genius, but I don't know. It's like serious. I was like, no.
I don't know.
God.
Yeah, I get it. I yeah, whatever with him. I'm not, but he was so full of himself. It was,
it happens to a lot.
I don't
lot
wish
of
him
them.
Bad. I just it that hurt me, and I physically I physically wanted to do something, and everybody was like, "Don't." So,
yeah.
And then when he wrote that email, I was like, "Oh, here's an opportunity that I can write it." I didn't threaten. I didn't do anything like that. I just wrote.
Was this before
facts.
Joe Rogan?
After.
Oh, really?
After. Because it was, I guess, he had dealing the heat of Joe. And then I was on Bert Kreischer's podcast. And that's where we were talking about it. Because Bert is a big Freddie Soto fan.
Mm.
And he was, like, just saying how great this bit was. And, you know, Freddie was my best friend. So
I love Freddie.
Yeah.
Everybody loved Freddie.
Wasn't he the greatest?
He was a great guy. I was so sad when I heard that. Because I was already gone from here, I think.
Yeah, it was 2005.
Yeah.
Him and Richard died in the same year, Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And Freddie was his limo driver. Mitzi got him that job.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, no, let me ask you a weird – this is a weird question, but I can't remember if it's you or somebody in your that camp during this time. But when you were here while they were still striking, correct?
Actually, I came just afterwards.
But did you get blamed for running somebody over in the parking lot, or
no,
was that Ollie Joe?
That was probably Ollie Joe.
I'm not, because it was somebody driving Mitzi in.
No, it might have been Lou Deck. Do you remember Lou Deck?
Yeah, Lou, we had Lou Deck on.
Okay, it might have been Lou
People
Deck.
Love that podcast because they love Lou because he would tell all these crazy stories about touring and stuff.
Paulie, yeah, peeing off the top of the building onto the protesters.
Oh, yeah.
Peed on Jay Leno's head.
I remember that. I mean, I remember that story. I think we had Paulie tell it, too.
Yeah.
But somebody got run over in the front of the parking lot or hit because they sped in and whatever. And
no, then, I came in 81.
So at that point, the
it was already over.
All over.
Yeah, it was over by 80, I believe.
And now what comics were here when, like, that year? Because that's a giant year for the store.
Well, Pryor had just started coming back. It was like that was the big thing when I first started. There were lines down all the way down to Pink Dot.
Wow.
All the way down, you know, to Doheny.
Jesus.
And it was amazing. And, you know, people were offering cocaine to every doorman and every, you know, waitress. So, get me a seat. Because he
Thank
was here
you,
every
President
night.
Bush. R.I.P., brother.
He was here every night, and that was the big thing when I very first started. I was scared shitless when I first started. The way I got the job was just I was completely out of left field.
Yeah, because you're not a comic, so what would bring you in this building?
No, what happened was I was a piano player, and
oh right.
Well, that's how I got the job. My friend heard. See, one of the things I came out to California for was to write songs.
Okay.
And I wrote a bunch of songs, and nothing happened, and blah, 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 and all that stuff. So my friend Paul Regina, who, God rest his soul, he's gone too, was an actor out here. And he had me come out here. And then one night he said, you know, they got this thing at the comedy store, which is called a Singer's Showcase. It was up in the Belly Room.
Oh, okay.
And he said, why don't you go and do a couple of your songs, and maybe somebody will be there. I said, Paul, I don't sing. I'm not a good singer. He said, come on, let's just go. So we came in, we go up to the Belly Room. Of course, you know, we just walked in. Nobody stopped us.
Which is amazing, 1981. Like,
yeah,
because everyone's partying. They're not paying any attention.
No, probably, nobody gave a shit.
Yeah, it's Carl LeBeau and Sam Kinison running the door, I think.
They were just coming in. I mean, I think they were just dormant then. They used to used to sleep in their car in the parking lot.
Naturally.
And use my bathroom as to like wash up. and stuff back then. But what was I saying? It was,
sorry. So no. Paul Regina, you come in, you go
to the belly room. So I come in, mm-hmm. and I go up to the belly room and open the door, and Argus is sitting there. This is the first person I ever met in the comedy store. It was Argus famous. Hamilton. And he's eating his dinner, watching a TV. There was his old TV up on the wall. And I said, is this the singer? He said, yeah, come on in.
So mosey on in.
Come on in. So I came in, and nobody was in there. And I sat down. Argus took his food and left. I sat down at the piano. There was an old piece of shit spinet piano with half the keys missing. And I said, well, maybe I'll just practice stuff.
Yeah.
So I started playing. And then other real singers came up and started filling out the room. So I got up and I sat down. And then the back door to Mitzi's office opened up. And she had, I don't know if it still exists, a back door that opened onto the belly room.
Yeah, of course.
And I had no idea who she was. I didn't know anything about the comedy store.
Yeah.
And so this little bag lady, with a clipboard, comes over to me. Comes over and says, "Who is playing the piano?" And I thought I was going to get in trouble. And she said, and I said, "Well, it was me." I raised my hand, and she said, "I'm Nancy Shore." I said, "I'm Michael Becker. Hi, nice to meet you." I had no idea who she was. And she said, "You play really good." Oh, okay, well, thank you. That's very nice. I thought, the homeless people like me. So she walks away. And then this lady named Joanne Kohler.
That was her.
She was the talent coordinator. Yes. And a kind of right hand also.
Yes.
And she comes running up the steps to the belly room and says, "Who's Michael Becker?" And I said, "Me?" And she said, "Do you want to play piano here?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know. What does it pay?" I was playing piano at Shakey's Pizza Parlors. I was making $11
store
an hour.
Shakies, you got to weigh it out.
Well, actually, I was making $11 an hour.
Oh, wow.
And plus tips. You know, you put a big tip jar up there. And in 1981, that wasn't too bad.
At Shakey's Pizza.
At Shakey's Pizza Parlors. And so she said it was like $20 a night. And I was like, well, all right, well, whatever. And I didn't think
Jesus, I didn't know she did that to the piano players, too.
Oh, yeah. We were independent contractors, so we had to pay our own taxes and everything, which was actually illegal. That's a whole nother story.
Oh, it's not. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah. She had half the people, the doormen and all those things she had as independent contractors. And
$25 a shift.
Yeah. And legally, it was against the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to try and tell her she's going to get caught one of these days, but she didn't give a shit.
She didn't care. She didn't care.
You know? And because a lot of the people that worked for the IRS when they would come here, they would be like so enamored, you know, here's Robin Williams, you know, or give them free tickets or something. They come
see
and meet Richard Pryor. And it's like, yeah.
Eddie
so,
Murphy. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, they forget about it. But, and so Joanne actually called me, and I started like the next week playing piano in the belly room to nobody. And then eventually.
Were they still doing just the girls up there? Or that?
Yeah, it was just the girls. Girls of the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Cecil Glass and. Oh my God. It was Gail, what's her name? She went on to Saturday Night Live. Oh, there was a bunch of women.
Like Carrie Snow. That's all I know. Like,
but it wasn't Carrie.
Was Lois here?
Lotus Weinstock.
Oh, Lotus Weinstock, yes. Yeah, but yeah, I was thinking of Lois sweetheart. Bromfield.
No, Lois is already making
Later?
It.
Oh, really?
I mean, she was already downstairs.
Oh, okay.
She already had sets.
Lois
like Sandra Bernhardt,
funny.
Those people, they're already doing sets in the OR.
Wow.
The people in the belly room were the people nobody ever
Still
heard
trying
of.
To come up. Yeah, Lotus yeah. Weinstock was great. I met her in
Sweet.
The very beginning, and then she passed away of cancer.
Everybody we know died. What's going
okay,
on?
Okay, that's weird. Me and Harris Pete used to play. By the way, he'll be here this weekend. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, say hello for me.
I
please.
Will. Harris Pete and I used to play Connect the Dead comics in the headshots. How yeah. fucking awful is yeah. that? But that's how slow we were.
Yeah.
That we would be connecting yeah. the fucking dead.
Well, we talked about when we used to, like when I was at the piano and you were waitressing and I was at, or a friend of our Russell was at the door.
The best.
We would,
Russell Starlin.
We would have competitions of lip syncing the comics acts to each other because some of the comics, especially the ones that drank or,
they had
drugs.
A set.
Yeah, they had a set thing. It was memorized. And they were on the automatic pilot, so they do the exact same act every time. And so we could literally lip sync. We knew what the next joke was going to be.
Now, I remember a lot of comics loving your playing so much that they wanted to take you on the road.
Well, I worked. There was a couple of guys that I worked kind of with, like Jeff Altman,
Kip Adada. I remember all that.
We used to do
the subtle piano playing behind it. He was kind of cool.
He did a bit where Boris Becker has a big fat booger in his nose. And that came out of me playing something one night, and he said, you know, because my last name is Becker, and then he just said, Boris Becker, ladies and gentlemen. And I was like, no, it's Michael. Boris Becker has a big fat booger in his nose. And I started playing Boris Becker, and so every once in a while, he would come on.
It was entertaining.
In the main room, and he would just, in the middle of his act, he turned to me and go, hit it. And I would play, Boris Becker has a big fat booger in his nose. And he would do Boris. And the whole audience would go, what the fuck is that? But it was like, it was fun. It was like just the thing between me and him.
Sure.
You know? And it was fun. He's a great guy.
Altman was funny, boy. I love Altman.
I used to, I don't read music. And
oh, okay. And is it just Jeff Scott? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But you guys both write.
Yeah. Well, I taught myself. I don't know how it happened. But we always had a piano in my house. So a lot of times I'd have to go – some of the guys had charts and stuff.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, like the –
That's
the,
a lot.
The – I can't think of that guy's name. There was a couple of guys that had before they used tapes.
Right.
They actually had charts for the piano player to play their songs that they would sing, the impressionist guys. And I would have to, like, sneak out from behind the piano – run into the other room and grab the piano player. Go, you gotta go to the main room now. I can't do this. And we would switch.
Yeah, because Dice had tapes.
Yeah,
everybody
got tapes.
Yeah, he came. I forget what year, but I think he 79. I'm not sure, but he was obsessed with making tapes. And rehearsing. He's the kind of guy that rehearsed his act over and over again, which is funny because I feel like everyone did that back then. They all had a certain. Because if you had an act, then that was it. That's all you needed. Like, you have what to do. Like, Bruce Smirnoff, who we love, he had 20 minutes. Yeah. But if he had a stretch, he would probably just do that 20 minutes over again. Like, we don't know. Like, I always tell this joke that we had a manager named Dave George. I don't know if you remember him. He might have been after you before. Every year runs together for me. I have no idea what year it is. Because I started in 93. Mm. But it's 2018, I'm like, oh shit, it just keeps going, huh? Like, I have no idea what's going on. And you started in 81, so I don't know if it messaged like that for you, but Bruce was on stage and we had no other comics, and they were like, I was like, just let him stretch. And the manager looked at me, he goes, what's he gonna do, start over? I was like, Dave, you're such a dick. Well, what are we gonna do? But he was kind of pissy because he was a comic and Mitzi didn't really. Yeah. When you come in as a manager and you want to be a comic, you're fucked.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Mitzi story or moment? Or?
Oh, God.
I'm sure you have a million.
Yeah, I do. Well, I guess, I don't know. It was the time I had to bring her dead dog to the to the vets.
What was the dog's
name? To the holistic
name?
Vet, Kelly.
Kelly. I was going to say that, but then I was like, no, that was the Irish
girl.
Well,
she went out of town, right? She went to Florida. And I get a call. It was like a drizzly Thursday morning, and Paulie Shore calls me and said, dude, Kelly's dead. And I'm like, well, okay. What do you want? Do something. Okay. So I called. She had me take – the dog was like 16 years old. It was a little tiny, like a Maltese mix thing. And a sweet little dog. The dog had no teeth. I mean, it was so old. And she had me bring it to the holistic vet in North Hollywood, so they would do what do you call it? You know, acupuncture.
Acupuncture.
And I felt so sorry for this little dog. You know, the dog was like, "Let me die, just let me die. I'm old." And so I called the acupuncture people and I said, "Look, Kelly died. And Mitzi's not here. She won't be back till Sunday. I don't want to tell her because there's nothing she can do." I don't want to get her all upset because Kelly was like her favorite thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. Kelly
and
was
so her. I just said, can we put Kelly on ice until, you know,
Shut
Sunday.
Shut your mouth.
No, I swear to God. And they said, yeah, oh, yeah, bring her over. So I had to bring Kelly. I put Kelly – Paulie had put Kelly in a plastic bag by the back door. I went over. I grabbed Kelly in the plastic bag, put her in my car, and I drove over. And they put a they put her in the thing. And then Sunday, Mitzi came – I came home, and there was a message on my answering machine. And it was Mitzi saying, Mike, we got to get together real early tomorrow. I got a lot of stuff. I said, well, that's weird, because I had asked Paulie to tell her, you know. And so then 2 minutes later is another message, and it's and she was crying. And she said, Mike, Mitzi, you know, Kelly's dead. And I was like, oh, jeez, Paulie didn't tell her.
Oh, my God.
Because what happened, she called home, and her maid, Linda, said, yeah, she said, she always used to ask, how's Kelly, first. And, of course, Linda probably said, Mitzi, sure, Kelly's dead.
Oh, she dead, Miss Mitzi. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Just so blunt.
That was the worst thing.
I one time made fun of my a family, my brother's wife's mom, my brother's mother-in-law, I guess. And I said, she lost her cat and she wants to go to therapy. Isn't that crazy? And Mitzi was like, no. And I was like, oh, shit, because I didn't know about Kelly. Yeah. And then she told me all about Kelly and she started crying.
Yeah.
And it was years later. I'm telling you, this had to be 2003 that we were sitting in her living room and she's crying, sobbing. And I was like, oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
She had a funeral for Kelly in her backyard. She buried her in the backyard. Ollie Joe came and she catered it with
When you need a pastor.
Yeah.
Argus,
she catered it with
Southern
Tony
Baptist.
Romas.
There you
I remember because I chipped the tooth. But and then about a month later, I get a card from the holistic vet saying, you know, we're condolences and stuff to me. And inside was a coupon for like $20 off.
Oh, Jesus. You know,
a holistic vet thing.
I hate that we have to wrap this up because there's another – this studio is like jam-packed. And
no problem.
It's my fault that – whatever.
It was a pleasure being here and seeing
you. I am so excited. Now, when is your book coming out or you don't –
Well, we're still working
on
it. Yeah, because I've had some medical problems in the last few years.
Yeah,
and
you're
so,
amazing. You're going to kick its ass.
Well, and so it had to be shelved. I mean, we're working towards it, and so I have no idea.
Right.
It hasn't been sold to a publisher yet, but
got it. But we'll get it.
Yeah,
you got to. It's too good. You have
somehow.
Too many great stories.
I hope so.
And I want to have you back on with Rick here because I know he'll fuck with you as Argus. And
it's so great.
It's
absolutely.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it rained in L.A. and everyone panicked.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike Becker, for
God
being
bless
here.
You. Thank
I greatly
you.
Appreciate it. This is coming out tomorrow. Right? Tomorrow's Thursday. Yes.
Yeah.
So next week I'll be in Jersey at Uncle Vinny's in Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
Yeah.
The 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. And then Parks Casino in Philadelphia on the 19th.
Wow.
The Fabio's on the 20th.
The Fabio's?
Yeah. Woo! It's a restaurant.
Isn't that the pizza place in Laverne and Shirley?
Oh, you might be right. I like that.
Oh, it's DeFazio.
DeFazio. I knew it was something like that. But DeFazio's might be sold out, but that's in Media. Go to my website. They have all that information. And the Trocadero on the 27th, December 27th, Trocadero. And then Vegas with Dice, 28th, 29th, 30th.
Hey, thanks, Eleanor. For real, just got back from doing Toronto. That was awesome. And so then the only cool thing I got to plug, and I only want to plug
one
thing.
Were you with Rocco?
Rocco and Rouse, yeah.
Jason Rouse, one of my favorites.
Oh, my God, it was insane. There was a fight and all kinds of great stuff in the Yuck Yucks. I got a hoodie out of the deal. It was amazing. I'll talk about it on my podcast so we're not bleeding over because we got people that got to come in next. But New Year's Eve, Fremont, Ohio. If you're in Northwest Ohio or Southeast Michigan, come hang out.
Is this where you're going to drop the car or
we're
some
We're dropping
shit?
The fucking car at midnight. There's a sprint car that's getting dropped at midnight. So we're doing two shows, one's at 6, one's at 9. So,
and what's the name of your podcast again?
Civilianization.
That's right.
All right, man.
Give a listen, folks.
Hell yeah.
Rate us, subscribe, all that shit. You know what the fuck's up.